Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. A previous program on seniors and the arts focused on finding happiness in pursuing or participating in the arts. Today, we continue with articles that might inspire you to explore an area of the arts that has intrigued you, but you've held off over concern about your ability, the benefit of simply listening to music, and how a daughter translated in the arts the story of her mother's life before and after dementia. They include from Next Avenue, It's Okay to Be Just Okay at Making Art by Sally Koslow, published May 2018, Finding Wisdom in the Arts by Francine Toder, PhD, published December 2018, This Performance Art Piece Spotlights Dementia by Julie Fitzinger, May 2019, and from John Hopkins, Keep Your Brain Young with Music. And we'll begin with It's Okay to Be Just Okay Making Art. Since the day I could read See Sally Run, I've been a word girl, following a predictable path, diary keeper, pen pal, school newspaper editor, poetry contest competitor, reporter, and magazine editor. In recent years, I have joined two book clubs, written novels, and coached other writers. Not that I don't like, say, art. Though a scheduling quirk at junior high school, however, I learned that if I wanted to play the cello in the orchestra, which we will not discuss after sixth grade, art no longer fit into my schedule. I never took another art class until this year. What grabbed me was a catalog description. Join Jean's painting class to express yourself and improve your artistic skills. Receive highly personalized instruction in a fun, casual atmosphere. The time slot worked, Friday afternoons, when I'd otherwise be ruminating on whatever I'd recently composed and not necessarily improving it. Most likely by 1 o'clock at the end of a work week, to paraphrase Oscar Wilde, I'd have spent all morning taking out a comma and would be spending all afternoon putting it back in. Temptation to make art. Making art was tempting. I had loved weighing in on the cover and layout design of the magazines I edited, McCall's and Lifetime. Maybe like George W. Bush, who has taken up painting, I'd even turn out to be talented. But then again, how could I join such a class when the artist in the family was my sister Betsy? As kids, our aunt had tried to teach us to knit. Betsy promptly produced itsy bitsy doll clothes, followed by scarves and sweaters. The scarf I knit wouldn't fit a Barbie. My sister later designed her own wedding contract with Hebrew calligraphy and an intricate border so exquisite that friends begged her to design their marriage contracts. This led to a flourishing business that surprised no one in our family because, obviously, she took after our fine motor skills dad. I, on the other hand, was like Mom, who never got artsy-er than frosting a cake, was the best customer at the Fargo Public Library, and for amusement joined a history club that required presenting a research paper every year. In 17th century Canada, unlicensed fur traders, the descendants of French trappers and native women, ran a brisk business. Well, nevertheless, the word fun in the catalog stood out like a clown nose. 10 years before, when I'd had the luxury of a severance payout after a job ended, friends had urged me to pursue a hobby. I did. I joined a writing workshop. This led to writing books, which, while new for me, was still safely in my comfort zone. Live dangerously, I told myself. I handed over my credit card, shopped a craft store, and armed with acrylic paints and nervous trepidation, showed up. The first thing I learned was to forget anything I had ever thought I knew about art. Well, that wasn't hard because despite years of visits to the Met, I still mistook Monet for Manet. I discovered that if I wanted to sketch, I had to hold the pencil high up in its middle, not toward the point. And that when I was trying to copy a face, like a new painter, 43, I was determined to create portraits, I should view the photograph I was copying as shapes and shadows, not actual features. These weren't nostrils, just spots, and they were purplish, not black. Also, the filbert brush is one for making cute little daisy shapes and in color. If you're not careful, every combo turns sludge brown. On and on the instruction went as I tried to process information in an entirely new way. My teacher needed to repeat his suggestions to me early and often, but praised my color sense and encouraged me to think that I had a smidge of talent. The technical definition for smidge on a scale of 1 to 10 is probably about 2.5. I didn't kid myself. I was no Mary Cassatt, probably no George W. Bush either. But even as I took regular flack for my brush hygiene, I could live with that. My instructor wasn't a book reviewer pointing out that my plot was a snooze fest or that my characters arched their eyebrows every time they had an insight. I take my writing very personally. Not so my art. With my first portrait, a kinda sorta like this of a toddler I love, I had already exceeded my expectations. My second portrait was of my little niece in Santa Monica, whom I painted next to a palm tree holding an ice cream cone. In real life, she is 4. On canvas, I'd estimate her age to be 11. Still not sure why. My third effort was my 2-year-old neighbor holding a doll. She recognizes Dolly, but insists that the kid is me. Hey, everyone's a critic. My work in progress is meant to be my husband back in the day. This assumes that he once looked like a bobble-headed cast member of West Side Story. Rejuvenation, not perfection. So, often in life, we urge to practice until we reach perfection. Master that etude, that golf swing, that pastry crust. Don't even think about playing bridge or dancing the tango unless you can take the time to do it right. But is that really true? On one level, I suppose it is. If you're learning to fly a plane, please pass the damn test. But in many cases, dipping a toe in alien waters is rejuvenating all on its own. Without aspirations of greatness, you may still exercise a different part of your brain, break out of constricting stereotypes, or simply reintroduce yourself to an activity you were forced to abandon in 7th grade because you thought you might like the cello better. The bottom of the painting learning curve is as far as I may ever go. But I've discovered the bigger lesson is that there's liberation when you may never exceed average. You don't have to excel to enjoy every activity. And if you're far from a virtuoso, there is no need to deliver a TED Talk on the cult of failure to justify your time. I see my art experience as a whole new take on nevertheless, she persisted. For 3 hours every Friday, I lose myself in a visual world. When I return to my computer to write the next day, I am refreshed. Now, when I visit a museum, I study brush strokes up close, bringing far greater pleasure than in the past, and that's okay. Sally Koslow is the author of Slouching Toward Adulthood, Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest, and 3 novels, including Little Pink Slips, inspired by her years as editor-in-chief of McCall's Magazine. Well, let's go on now to Finding Wisdom in the Arts by Frances Toder. I didn't set out to write another book. I began by pondering, as psychologists do, my current life stage at 60-plus chronological years. Time passes swiftly and change is inevitable. Perhaps it was simply a matter of shifting priorities or interests. But as I approached age 70, I began to feel wanderlust for exploring what could yet be discovered in my own life. What's next? And if not now, when? Surfaced as nagging questions begging for answers. These could be the quintessential questions of the first stage in life without a clearly laid out path and set of expectations. At this point in our lives, many of us are still physically active, intellectually curious, emotionally stable, and yearning for meaningful ways to spend our time. But how? In my case, I went to look at cellos in a San Francisco shop that sells and rents stringed instruments. Knowing nothing more about the cello than the smooth and mellow music it can produce, I rented one, along with a case to transport and protect it, and in rapid succession, I bought a self-instruction book, a music stand, and a metronome. And thus began my journey with music, which led to writing The Vintage Years, a book about the benefit of pursuing the life of the artist after 60. Broadly defined, that includes writing, playing an instrument, pursuing the fine arts of one sort or another, or immersing yourself in any activity in a novel or creative way. I use the term artist very loosely. It's as much about the way you might approach things as the form it takes, bringing openness and a child's fascination to the experience, what Buddhists call a beginner's mind. All sorts of books have been written about the years following retirement, but this book specifically focuses on the fine arts because of the benefits they provide to an aging brain, and conversely, because the aging brain has capacities that actually help develop the budding, late-blooming artist. This is a circular reinforcing process, and we are the beneficiaries. The science of aging. The burgeoning field of neuroscience offers some good news to the counterbalance the popular beliefs about the downside of getting old. Research findings suggest that humans don't outlive their quest for learning and natural curiosity. The brain, according to recent scientific research, does not simply decline, become less robust, or lose its capacity for growth. It maintains its vigor quite well, and like a muscle, if you give it the right kind of exercise, it will repay your effort in some interesting ways. The brain's ability to adapt, renew, and reshape itself over time is called neuroplasticity, a powerful and relatively new idea. There is some evidence that over 60 folks can actually focus better than the average young person. Our ability to zoom in on what we wish to focus on may be the compensation for other kinds of neural losses. Keeping neurons firing at rates that will ensure brain flexibility is an important goal that requires effort, just the kind of effort that someone in this stage of life is ready and able to give. While writing the book, I decided to interview more than 20 artists who had not begun to explore their passion until later in life. I noticed some significant similarities. One striking phenomenon was their ability to focus with laser sharpness while they were engaged in their art. Whether writing a poem, sculpting, or playing the violin, many described being in an altered state of consciousness, alert and aware but without distraction, in a cocoon, where nothing else seemed to matter at the moment. They were learning entirely for its own sake and were much less worried about lack of talent or what others might think than they might have been earlier in life. Their stories now highlight the vintage years. An example, Henry is a wood carver, a tall, attractive man dressed youthfully in light-colored khakis and a crisp plaid shirt. He met me at the door with his walker. At 96, he lives alone and independently with a full life and a busy calendar. He has the distinction of being the oldest of the artists I interviewed. Wood carving requires some strength as well as dexterity, and until recently, Henry could lift and drag huge hunks of wood. At 68, 78, or even 88, wood carving had still been manageable, but not at 96. Henry explained, without much sadness, that he is now launched into his most recent project, 3D Art, A New Beginning. Nearly 30 years ago, Henry saw an art show that changed his life. Walking through the exhibit, he excitedly commented to his wife at his side, "Oh, this is what I like. I want to do this," referring to a large, detailed wood carving. And so began his long vintage years career as a wood carver. Simple as that, he began taking classes at retirement centers where he lived in New Jersey. West African traditional dance piqued Barbara's interest, and she began taking classes at a local community center where drummers played the rhythm. Over time, her fascination with the rhythmic tempo and beat led her to playing drums in the style of Central Africa. A friend told me about this drumming class. It was very focusing, and when you got to the groove of the rhythm, oh, I really liked it, and I've stuck with it, she said. Barbara wasn't even 60 at the time, the youngest of the artists featured in the Vintage Years. She is a psychologist and former dance therapist, perhaps explaining her love of dance and the pulse of drumming. Wisdom compensates for aging. The artists I wrote about have a lifetime accumulation of knowledge and experience, with the added bonus of a calmer, more focused brain. This leads to wisdom, a fitting compensation for aging. Arriving later in life, wisdom enhances the art and the artist. The late-blooming artist could not possibly have blossomed earlier, and the continuous learning of a wise elder is the ultimate stimulant for the brain. Frances Toder is the emeritus faculty member of California State University, Sacramento, and a clinical psychologist retired from private practice. Going on now to this amazing piece, Performance Art Spotlights Dementia by Julie Fitzinger. New York City dancer and filmmaker Gabri Krista was intent on fully capturing the story of her mother, Magdalena, before dementia caused the beautiful moments of her mom's life, along with some of its sadness, to completely fade from her memory. A few years ago, the two began to communicate via letter, with Krista asking questions and her mother sending responses from the Netherlands, where she lives. In her letters, Magdalena filled in details on everything from a traumatic childhood during World War II to her eventual relocation in the Dutch Caribbean island of Curaçao with her husband, Marcel Herman Ludwig Stomp, a Surinamese man, in 1960. The communication provided a meaningful connection up until the time her mother, now in her 80s, was no longer able to write. "My mom had been a school teacher and still had beautiful handwriting," said Krista, who is a past Guggenheim Fellow, a filmmaker and the assistant professor of professional practices at Barnard College of Columbia University's dance department. Not only did Krista, a boomer, want to learn her mother's story for personal reasons, but professionally, her goal was to create a multimedia presentation using art, dance, music, and film to honor her mother and others affected by dementia and Alzheimer's by telling the story of a life that remains vital in the face of the illness. In September 2018, Krista premiered a 60-minute show, Magdalena, at the Theater Lab in New York City. Joys and sadness. Josephine Magdalena Alida de Jong was born in Holland, in Rotterdam, and during World War II, the building where this little girl, known as Magdalena, lived, was bombed. She was the sole survivor of the attack. Her legs were broken. She was sent away to a family that she did not know, said Krista, adding that the doll her mother had at the time is spotlighted in Magdalena. At the age of 18 or 19, Magdalena met Marcel Stomp when he was going to school in the Netherlands. They met at a ballroom dancing class, said Krista. Both were attending teachers' college, and according to Krista, mixed-race relationships in the Netherlands did not carry the same stigma as in the United States at that time. After a 5-year courtship, the pair married in 1960 and moved back to Curaçao, where Krista and her siblings were born. Magdalena worked as a special education teacher. She was the only white teacher in an all-black school for boys. Then they returned to the Netherlands. Around that time, Magdalena turned 50. Signs of a change in her personality began to emerge. "At that time, I didn't know anything about dementia," said Krista. "My mom's case, depression and anxiety, were becoming more evident, but they weren't new. Her childhood trauma had also caused similar symptoms over the course of her life," Krista added, that while her dad just thought Magdalena was being difficult, she herself suspected something more. After several years, it became apparent that Magdalena required more care than Krista's father was able to provide. So Magdalena moved into a residence for people living with dementia, where Krista says she is happy and well cared for. That offers Krista peace of mind here in the United States. She travels to the Netherlands twice a year. Her father's home is near his wife's residence, and he visits often. I Become the Person with Dementia. Magdalena is divided into 8 chronological chapters representing the decades of Krista's mom's life. The performance features components including a simulated spoken word radio play about World War II, a recreation of conversations Krista had with her friends about Magdalena and the onset of dementia, as well as filmed and still images of Krista's mother and father from the past, along with footage of them today in their late 80s. Magdalena is smiling and looking happy on the grounds of the residence. In one scene, she waves from a window. Krista has fond memories of the film shoot with her parents, which includes the arrival of her father by bicycle. My mom was very aware of being filmed. She was walking straighter, asking if her clothes looked okay, said Krista. She was really into it. She was acting, and it was a great day. It is the segments of dance during Magdalena, which Krista, a former dancer with the Bill T. Jones, Arnie Zane Company, says are the most emotional. In my movements, I am trying to capture the feeling of what it would be like to have dementia, she notes. I become the person with dementia. By telling her mother's story, Krista hopes to help remove the stigma around dementia. As an Atlantic Fellow for Equity in Brain Health at the Global Brain Health Institute, an education and advocacy organization, Krista says she continues to learn about dementia and Alzheimer's and their impact. Further, Krista hopes to continue her work around the aging population and the arts with the Magdalena Project, a series of short vignettes she plans to create spotlighting older women, both former and current dancers. Just moving, no words, said Krista. They aren't famous, they're just doing what they love. These will be simple images of connection, she adds. I've had people approach me and send me emails about their own experiences, she said. One woman told me that through my mother's story, she realized her parents had similar issues. An appointment with a doctor confirmed a diagnosis. The woman was grateful and said she had never thought a performance piece could change her life in that way. Although Magdalena's disease is progressing, her daughter sees more signs of the mother she knew when she was younger. Her happy and loving personality has come back, said Krista. She knows her mother can be a little sad at times, but due to the nature of her dementia, she can't overthink her sadness, said Krista. Magdalena is the story of my mom's life, with the through line of a story about dementia, she says. You get to know her, and that's important. Julie Fitzinger is the editor for Next Avenue's lifestyle coverage across the Living and Technology channels. Her journalism career has included feature writing for the Star Tribune, as well as several local parenting and lifestyle publications. And now we're going on to this short piece from John Hopkins, Keep Your Brain Young with Music, from the Aging Well, Maintaining a Healthy Mind as You Age section. If you want to firm up your body, head to the gym. If you want to exercise your brain, listen to music. There are few things that stimulate the brain the way music does, said Johns Hopkins otolaryngologist. If you want to keep your brain engaged throughout the aging process, listen to or playing music is a great tool. It provides a total brain workout. Research has shown that listening to music can reduce anxiety, blood pressure, and pain, as well as improve sleep quality, mood, mental alertness, and memory. Experts are trying to understand how our brains can hear and play music. A stereo system puts out vibrations that travel through the air and somehow get inside your ear canal. The vibrations then tickle the eardrum and are transmitted into an electrical signal that travels through the auditory nerve to the brainstem, where it is reassembled into something we perceive as music. Johns Hopkins researchers have had dozens of jazz performers and rappers improvise music while lying down inside an MRI machine to watch and see which areas of their brains light up. Music is structural, mathematical, and architectural. It is based on relationships between one note and the next. You may not be aware of it, but your brain has to do a lot of computing to make sense of it, notes one otolaryngologist. Everyday brain boosts music. The power of music isn't limited to interesting research. You might try these methods of bringing more music and brain benefits into your life. Jumpstart your creativity. Listen to what your kids or grandkids listen to, experts suggest. Often we continue to listen to the same songs and genre of music that we did when we were in our teens and 20s, and we generally avoid anything that's not from that era. New music challenges the brain in a way that old music doesn't. It might not feel pleasurable at first, but that unfamiliarity forces the brain to struggle to understand the new sound. Recall a memory from long ago. We search familiar music, especially if it stems from the same time period that you are trying to recall. Listening to the Beatles might bring back the first moment you laid eyes on your spouse, for instance. And listen to your body. Pay attention how you react to different forms of music, and pick the kind that works for you. What helps one person concentrate might be distracting to someone else, and what helps one person unwind might make another person jumpy. Well, the two articles that might interest you that I didn't have room for are Next Avenue's How You Can Overcome Opera Phobia and Maggie Sortino's May-June 2019 issue of City South Magazine on the Arts and Culture of Music for Life. I will admit to being a bit inspired by Sally Koslow. I have always said I have trouble with stick figures. Yet my mother was a talented artist, and I have given some thought to trying a painting class. I am glad to know that simply listening to a variety of music forms also is good for my brain. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.